From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. And Lord willing, he'll be back with us tomorrow from a extended trip in Israel and Jordan. I know we're all looking forward to hearing about that. This is Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. Well, we're getting a look at questions the special counsel Robert Mueller wants to ask President Trump related to Michael Flynn, former National Security Advisor, and former FBI Director James Comey firings, and the recusal of Attorney General Jeff Sessions and ties to Russia. We'll get legal analysis from Ken Cuccinelli in just a moment. And comedian Michelle Wolf trashed White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. Folks, how did we get here? How did we get in this place and time where you can no longer agree to disagree and civility is out the window? Well, that's what happened at the recent White House Correspondents' Dinner. She also made horrific comments about abortion. We'll talk with Tim Graham with the Media Research Center. And it turns out Barack Obama was not the only one who wanted to fundamentally transform American society. A new survey by the American Culture and Faith Institute shows that a large majority of the nation's adults have radically redefined moral behavior related to family matters, and it appears that they are not finished making such changes. Noted researcher George Barna will be here to discuss his new findings. And of course, all of this awesome content can be found on TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins, and you can follow me at RJonesReports. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. Not sure I want to be these days, but I'm there. Well, a list of interview questions has been leaked that Robert Mueller wants to ask President Trump in order to understand Trump's Russia ties, possibly, and determine if the president obstructed justice. The special counsel has nearly 50 questions for President Trump. Joining us now is Ken Cuccinelli, president of the Senate Conservatives Fund, background as a lawyer in private practice, and spent 4 years as Virginia's Attorney General. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be on with you.
Thank you so much. Well, lots going on, and you know, Ken, so many folks are just trying to make sense of this. I think a lot of folks would just like to see it go away, but that doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon. What's your initial analysis here of what we're hearing now about these leaked questions?
You know, it's funny for me, on things going back almost 2 years now, that's well into the 2016 presidential election, I keep finding myself in agreement with Professor Dershowitz, who's typically thought of as a bastion of the liberal left. He has said that these questions look like an effort to play gotcha with the president. And I have to say, I agree. I mean, these are overwhelmingly covering ground that we've all heard something about or another. There's nothing really new here in terms of subject matter. And frankly, most of it doesn't have to do with anything to do with Russia or the election. Most of it has to do with, I'll call it double checking, if you will, other occurrences. Like, what did you do about Mike Flynn? When did you know? What did you say? Was he acting on your behalf? And now, mind you, Mike Flynn is cooperating with the special counsel as part of his plea agreement already. So it looks like they're testing information against the president. And when you see this many questions directed at that sort of information, it really looks like an effort to just trip him up in a lie.
Yeah, you mentioned a gotcha moment. Some are saying, Ken, that he certainly already knows the answers to some of these questions, whether he does or not. Like one of you said, Flynn, one of the questions is, how was the decision made to fire Mr. Flynn on February 13th, 2017?
Right. And there are several others with respect to Mike Flynn, of course. You know, what did you know about his contacts with Kislyak, the Russian ambassador during the transition? Was he acting with you at your behest? You know, and then they move forward in time with Flynn. Why did your lawyers engage in discussion that included this, or did they discuss the pardon with Mr. Flynn? If so, why? You know, what efforts were made to reach out to Mr. Flynn on that, in that regard, and so forth. So, you know, those are doing two things. One, they're, in my view, looking to trip up the president and catch him in the situation that many have been caught in, and that's lying to the FBI. And second, they seem much more aimed at obstruction of justice analysis than any sort of invasion of the 2016 election by the Russians. And we know the Russians were playing around in the 2016 election, but the real question for Mueller is, was there any collusion? Was there any working together between the Trump campaign and the Russians? And even his questions don't suggest he's looking for anything new from President Trump. Now, perhaps Mueller may have suspected that the questions might leak out, and so withheld some. But, you know, if I am Donald Trump's lawyer, like John Dowd was until he quit, my advice would be, look, don't sit to answer these. These are invitations to traps. If you could remember wrong and be accused of lying, which is a felony, and thus lead to impeachment. There's universal agreement the president can't be indicted while he's president. But nonetheless, it doesn't mean he couldn't be impeached or some other public issue couldn't be raised. I mean, frankly, these questions suggest to me that Mueller ought to wrap up his investigation without talking to the president. And despite the president's public comments, oh, I want to talk to Mueller, I'm going to explain everything to him. You know, given how inconsistent he is in many of the things he says, I mean, let's be candid, that doesn't strike me as a really good idea in a legal environment where precision, accuracy are judged as measures of honesty, which itself has criminal consequences if you are wrong. So very dangerous situation, but doesn't indicate to me, doesn't suggest to me this list of questions that there's new ground to be plowed by the special counsel.
And you know, I don't think I'm alone. A lot of folks, as you've been discussing here, have a lot of questions about the questions themselves, you know, and trying to read through that. Now, what about, you know, people are wondering who leaked the questions and what might the motivation be?
Yeah, you know, that could be, despite President Trump's protestations, that could be, you know, I think the questions suggest that the special counsel is fishing around to trip up the president. I think they could have just made the calculated decision that that's exactly what it would look like if to the public. And so they arranged for them to be released. On the other hand, if it's more nefarious, someone is simply trying to feed the fire, but if their statements are correct and it wasn't someone from the legal team, first of all, I don't know how someone outside the legal team lays their hands on these without an extraordinary amount of sloppiness from the legal team.
It's either one or the other, isn't it? It's either the Trump team or Mueller team. Right.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's on one side or the other. And it seems pretty clear it's on the Trump side now. They don't seem to be denying that. And but they've also said it's not from the legal team. So, but if you're saying that, that suggests you have a pretty good idea where it did come from. For myself, I would have never let, if I was Rudy Giuliani, I would have never let this information out of the legal team. It would have never gone to anybody else. So unless the president handed it over to somebody, I don't know how it gets out. That's a very interesting question unto itself. I think, and this is pure speculation on my part, that it probably got out because the Trump folks wanted it out, because it looks like exactly what you and I have been talking about. It looks like a list of gotcha questions by Mueller to the president, and because it isn't plowing any really new ground. It's all going back over questions that have already been asked of other people.
Well, do you think President Trump should be nervous on this?
Well, if I were President Trump, I would take my lawyer's advice and not sit down to answer the questions. Let him come to his conclusions without my participation. He has other sources of information, lots of other sources of information. I really don't feel like for President Trump, there's anywhere to go but down here. You know, hey, one of the traps lawyers fall into, and President Trump isn't a lawyer, and I've seen it in court. I've seen very experienced lawyers in court do this. They really, really, really want a witness to say X. And so they keep asking the witness a question a few different ways, hoping they'll say X or get it, trying to get them to say X. And they don't say it. They say not X, not X, not X. And the more times they say it, the more times they do it, the more times the lawyer is the one who gets buried. So one of the morals of the story is the best witness in the world is the other side's when they're digging their own hole. And I'm afraid that what Mueller wants here is the president to dig his own hole. And the president shouldn't take up that shovel.
Yeah, it's like it reminds me of the movie A Few Good Men, you know, where the general's being grilled at the very end of the movie. You know, you can't handle the truth. And he finally admits, you know, that he called for the code red. And it's a similar scenario, isn't it?
Well, and for this many questions, for the length of time it would take to have these conversations, just thinking about the president's talking style and his, frankly, lack of discipline when it comes to being consistent on a message, I just think this is a minefield for him, and it's meant to be a minefield for him. I mean, I think in many ways that's the point. It may be that without talking to the president, Mueller wraps up and in his report he says, couldn't really determine what was in the mind of the president. He wouldn't talk to us. But frankly, I think that's a lot better outcome than talking yourself into a hole. I mean, some of the most common legal advice lawyers give, and I am among those who give this advice, is shut up.
Yeah, that's good advice.
it is. Very few people, I'm a partner in a Second Amendment law firm, we talk about this all the time, very few people talk their way out of jail. Lots of people talk their way into jail. And, you know, the president has no really good reason, no advantage to the president. I think he believes he'll have an advantage, but there's no real advantage to sitting down and subjecting yourself to these sorts of deposition questions under oath, because the point isn't so much to find information and clear your name. It is more accurately to trip you up.
Right. Well, Ken Cuccinelli, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Very insightful. Appreciate you taking time to come on the show.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you.
Okay. Good to talk with you, too. That's Ken Cuccinelli, president of the Senate Conservatives Fund, longtime lawyer in private practice and spent 4 years as Virginia's attorney general. And by the way, some in Congress are even considering legislation that would protect Mr. Mueller's appointment. That's kind of interesting new news. Well, coming up next, appalling comments made about Press Secretary Sarah Sanders at the recent White House Correspondents' Dinner. When did this kind of commentary start being okay, even from a comedian? We'll talk with Tim Graham of the Media Research Center when we return. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number 800-225-4008 or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you and may God bless the United States of America.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org. Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
I think she's very resourceful. Like, she burns facts and then she uses that ash to create a perfect smoky eye. Like, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's lies. It's probably lies. And I'm never really sure what to call Sarah Huckabee Sanders. You know, is it Sarah Sanders? Is it Sarah Huckabee Sanders? Is it Cousin Huckabee? Is it Auntie Huckabee Sanders? Like, what's Uncle Tom but for white women who disappoint other white women? Oh, I know, Aunt Coulter.
I think there's a lot of people not sure what to call you, Miss Michelle Wolf. It's certainly not a comedian. Comedian in quotes, tenfold. And Michelle Wolf went after Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, as you just heard, at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Well, how did we get here? When did it become okay to make these kinds of attacks? You know, when I was a kid, I remember Saturday Night Live when things were kind of, were really funny, the Coneheads and whatnot. And we have gotten so rash and uncivil that I had to bring Tim Graham, and I keep hoping, Tim, that we won't have you on to talk about these things. Tim's the executive editor of Newsbusters and is the Media Research Center's director of media analysis. Tim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being here. This is so unsettling, I think, for most folks, Tim. I've got some other clips I'm going to play later in the show. This isn't even the most egregious. She said some really horrific things about abortion. But how did we get here?
Well, I think the thing that we've really tried to stress here as critics of the media is, you know, the liberal response to this is, we can't be as crude as Trump. Trump, you can't be, you're not allowed to be critical of the crudeness of the comedian because Trump is crude. So I would simply say this. This is a comedian who is invited by the White House Correspondents Association, which presents itself as an objective group of reporters. And yet, year after year after year, this is the third year in a row they've gotten somebody from Late Night at Comedy Central, which is one of the most religion-hating, far-left channels on cable. And so what the White House Correspondents Association is saying in their selection of, quote-unquote, entertainment, is this is who they think is funny, and this is who they think is edgy, and this is who they think we should all, you know, is going to get them the buzz this party needs. It sells tables, which fund its scholarships. And, of course, now the dinner is being covered live on CNN, on MSNBC, on Fox, not just on C-SPAN.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's – but the other thing that's really important to underline is – and Brian Stelter looked like a really silly little man when he suggested, well, Barack Obama didn't like going to these dinners either. No, Barack Obama had a series of comedians who absolutely adored him, and the trouble they got in was more for what they said against the Republicans. For example, in 2009, when Wanda Sykes was the first one under Obama, she got in trouble for saying, I hope Rush Limbaugh's kidneys fail. And Larry Wilmore, the last one of the Obama era, was mostly ignored. Everybody was spending so much time giving credit to Obama as the best comedian in the room. But Larry Wilmore actually ended his remarks by saying, so the idea that Barack Obama had a harsh room to face is ludicrous. You know, in 2015, it was Cecily Strong who, when his presidency was over, sang To Sir With Love to him on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm. Are we seeing any feminist outrage? Are you seeing some on the left that are pushing back?
No. Again, but she, look, she, you're right, she made pro-abortion remarks. She compared Sarah Huckabee Sanders to the Aunt Lydia character on The Handmaid's Tale. She suggested that she was a white female Uncle Tom, or what she, her joke was, she's an Aunt Coulter. Hardy har har. She wished Kellyanne Conway would be, you know, have a tree fall on her. I don't want her to get hurt, just stuck. You know, the idea that these people laugh at this stuff means they are motivated by hatred. Because you only if you hate these people can you find this stuff remotely funny.
And now there's a hashtag, actually, hashtag Stand With Sarah Sanders on Twitter. Have you seen that?
I haven't, but I think that this is the, you know, again, they had put her on the dais. The whole idea that they claim, this is the phoniest claim they have, this is a dinner about the First Amendment. No, it's not. It's a dinner to celebrate liberals. This is a dinner about unity. No, it's obviously a night for division. You don't keep inviting these comedians and say this is a night about unity in journalism.
Right, right. And you know, we know now that some 90% of journalists are registered Democrats, so we shouldn't really be surprised. And can we blame President Trump for not wanting to go?
No, I think it's look. I think that it's become quite obvious. It's a great illustration of what people didn't like about George W. Bush, that he would show up and endure this, like he did with Stephen Colbert, and would be attacked viciously and would not return it. The viciousness, which, you know, is good, you know, it makes him a good, you know, turn the other cheek guy. But I think the best answer is to say, I'm not coming. Who would, you know, it's like, why would O'Reilly show up, you know, for a weekly interview on Fox News? I mean, he's not going to do that because he doesn't see it as something that's in his interest. So that's why Trump, there's no reason at all for him to show up for this dinner, and I think the idea that he goes out and gives a speech instead is smart. I think what was interesting this year, Tony, was he did really talk a lot about the media in Michigan in the remarks he gave. So there wasn't that contrast of Trump attacking the journalists as the journalists celebrated themselves.
Good points, Tim. I'm sorry we had to have you on this one, but you brought some great insights. Appreciate you having being here on the show with us.
You bet.
All right. Tim Graham, Media Research Center. We're going to talk more about this towards the end of the show. I want to hear from you. Well, coming up next, major new findings about American family morality. I think you're going to be surprised. No, I think you're actually going to be shocked with what's in this new research. We're going to talk with researcher George Barna. He's dug deep this time, as he always does, but really new findings that I think you're going to want to hear about. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Make sure to check us out online. You check out Tony on Twitter at T. Perkins, and online, TonyPerkins.com. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
You've tuned in to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's good to be with you here. Now, pastors, church leaders, listen up here, because this next topic is a weeks-long series that will keep you busy for quite some time. When a national random sample of 1,000 adults was asked about the morality of 8 family-related behaviors, large majorities of the public claim that 5 of those behaviors are acceptable, either because they are, quote, morally acceptable, or that they do not even qualify as moral issues, like that choice is a matter of personal preference, there's no right or wrong position related to the behavior. Well, joining us now is researcher George Barna, who directed the research project for American Culture and Faith Institute. George, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me, Russ. I appreciate it.
Well, Tony's on a plane coming back from Israel, and he sends his greetings to you, one of our great researchers that we love having on the program. In short, you found that at least 15%, as much as 40% of adults, do not consider behaviors such as divorce, abortion, and unmarried sexual intercourse to be moral issues. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
Well, what brought this study about, and let's get into it.
Well, as you know, one of the things that we try to do is figure out where is the culture? Where are we moving to? What do we desire? What do we think is right, wrong? And so one of the cultural foundations of America, of course, is the family. And in this survey, we were looking at a lot of different elements related to family. And one of those had to do with these moral perspectives as it relates to family relationships and family life. And so we ask these particular things on a regular basis. Every few years, we'll put these in the survey and find out where things stand. So it wasn't unusual for us to ask about these particular behaviors. What was unusual were the results. What we found is over the last 15 years in particular, there's been incredibly rapid change in the perspectives that Americans have on things such as divorce and having marital affairs, giving birth to children without the parents being married, pornography, even things like polygamy. And we're finding that the change is happening very rapidly. After having gone through a period of time where, for the better part of 30 to 40 years, there was virtually no change in our perspectives on these matters. So it really is a time of great turmoil for American society.
Now, some of the statistics I read in your study, getting a divorce acceptable to 77%, sexual intercourse between unmarried male and female adults acceptable 71%, having a baby without being married acceptable to 69%. I mean, George, these are really high numbers.
Yeah, they're very high numbers. And what's particularly disturbing to me, there were two things, really. The first thing that jumped out is that we found that the fastest growing aspect of all of these statistics is the proportion of Americans who say, when we ask about these behaviors, that they're not even moral issues, that there is no such thing as right or wrong related to any of these things. Whatever position you take should be just a matter of personal preference. And therefore, nobody can tell you that you're right or wrong in whatever position you take. And frankly, Russ, this parallels the rapid growth that we've seen in the proportion of Americans who say there's no such thing as absolute moral truth, that the Bible does not contain absolute moral truth, that the Bible can't be trusted to guide us in our lives. These are all additional things that we ask in our surveys. And we've been finding consistently that the proportions are rising. And part of that has to do with the fact that, frankly, there's no significant institution or influence entity in our culture that's pushing back on that thinking. Most people get that kind of perspective from their families, they get it from the government, and they get it from the media. In times past, they would get it from the church, but what we're hearing from people is that their churches don't talk about these issues. Therefore, they're pretty much left to getting their input from the law, from their family, and from the media.
Yeah, and you know, I'm finding the older I get, there's a major divide between baby boomers and the busters and the millennials, because there isn't, as you mentioned, the Bible isn't authoritative. So for someone like myself to use the Bible as a foundation, look, we have to start here and then go from there, right? And that's not in the mix, is it?
No, it really isn't. And they'll look you in the eye and say, well, you know what? Good for you. That's up to you. If you want to use the Bible, that's your choice. My choice is that I have to go with what feels right to me. And that's a very postmodern perspective, because in postmodernism, it's all about feelings. There is no absolute moral truth. It's about having enjoyable, comfortable, meaningful experiences. And so they'll fall back on, look, whatever's right for you, you do that. But please don't bring your self-righteousness over into my yard and begin to tell me how I ought to live my life. That depends on what makes me comfortable, what makes me feel good, what gives me happiness.
George, we're up against a break. Can you hold on and come back just for a few minutes?
Sure.
We're talking with George Barna. He's directed this research project for the American Culture and Faith Institute. Don't go away. We're going to continue this conversation with George Barna. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. We're going to keep talking with George, and then we're going to take a few calls. We'll talk to you in just a moment. Don't go away.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique, not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life. Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, Chairman of the Board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, President of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Well, we're rounding third base, heading towards home, talking with George Barna, who directed a new study for the American Culture and Faith Institute. George, thanks for holding on with us.
Yep.
One of the things you say is that your research found substantial differences between Protestants and Catholics. Explain that.
Well, we did. Again, for all of these eight moral perspectives, we broke the data out into the beliefs of each of those groups. We found that in each case, except for one, which had to do with the use of pills or medical devices for birth control, Protestants and Catholics were the same on that particular issue. But on the other seven, which had to do with divorce, sexual intercourse between unmarried adults, having a baby without being married, looking at pornography, having an abortion, polygamy, intimidating or aggressively dominating someone emotionally or physically, we found that in all of those cases, Catholics were different than Protestants, and in each of those differences, Catholics were more accepting of the behavior than were Protestants.
In political conservatives, you say, were massively different in their moral views, which is really no surprise from those who are politically liberal, and the gap between the two segments was 20 percentage points somewhat or more in relation to half of the eight items that you took a look at.
Yeah, it's true. The different ones there had to do with pornography. It was 27 percentage point difference between conservatives and liberals. Having an abortion, there was a 45 percentage point difference. Getting a divorce, a 14 point difference. Having a baby without being married, 31 points. Sexual intercourse between unmarried male and female, 33 points. So those were very significant differences. The thing to look at, by the way, in that regard, had to do with moderates. Where were moderates leaning? Because if push comes to shove, it would be essentially the moderates who were going to carry the day there. And what we found was that, again, in most cases, moderates were leaning toward the more liberal view on those moral behaviors as well.
So any advice in these debates, what often comes up is, you know, while these percentages are striking, millennials in that generation, well, you're just a hypocrite. You don't follow that anyway. At least I'm honest with myself. And a lot of folks would say, look, this is the standard. We may not always make it, but this is the standard.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have boundaries that you set. Otherwise, you have a society that's overwhelmed by anarchy. As an individual, we know from research, most people say that they want to continue to become a better person, but that's not going to happen just by wishing it. You've got to set standards and try to work toward consistently living out those standards. You know, then I think the question becomes, well, yeah, but how are we going to change the direction, the trajectory of these numbers? And I think that really goes back to, well, what is it that determines where we stand on these things? You know, traditionally, it was that dynamic partnership between church and family and government. What we've seen is that the church has really kind of dropped out of that partnership. Now the dynamic partnership is between government and media and perhaps the public schools. So we've got to have an influence on those entities that are really determining what it is that we are believing. And the reason for that is because we do what we believe. You know, we go back to the fact that only 10% of adults in America today have a biblical worldview. With each succeeding generation, that number has been dropping. So you look at, for instance, the elder generation, 17% have a biblical worldview, boomers 15%, baby busters, Gen X 7%, millennials only 4%. They are our primary parenting generation. So that tells you a lot about what is and what potentially could be happening in our households. You can't get what you don't have. So we really have a lot of work cut out for us if we want to turn these numbers around.
Well, George, we've got this information on TonyPerkins.com, and I'm sure that folks can find the full research at American Culture and Faith Institute, right?
Yeah, culturefaith.com or georgebarna.com, either of those will get you to this report and all the succeeding ones. We're constantly doing this kind of national research, and we hope that people will take it and run with it because it's vitally important.
And as I mentioned at the top of our segment, pastors out there, you got weeks and weeks of content here. So, George, thank you so much of joining us here today. Always appreciate having you on, and be well out there, and thanks for what you do.
Thanks, Russ. I appreciate it. And you can let Tony know I leave for Israel on Monday morning. So,
You're going out with Jim Garlow, aren't you?
That's correct. Yeah, looking forward to that.
All right. Thanks so much, George. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, George Barna. Noted researcher, just does strong work with the American Culture and Faith Institute. Want to go to the phone lines now, 866-372-7234. We've got lots to talk about in a short amount of time. Lots of great content today, 866-372-7234. Now, I want to play this other clip by quote-unquote comedian Michelle Wolf. Strong comment about abortion. You got little ones around. It's not bad language. It's just a strong comment. But you're not hearing this in the mainstream media or anywhere, matter of fact. And you thought what she had to say about Sarah Sanders was rough? Listen to this.
A lot of people want Trump to be impeached. I do not. Because just when you think Trump is awful, you remember Mike Pence. Mike Pence is what happens when Anderson Cooper isn't gay. Mike Pence is the kind of guy that brushes his teeth and then drinks orange juice and thinks, Mike Pence is also very anti-choice. He thinks abortion is murder, which, first of all, don't knock it till you try it. And when you do try it, really knock it. You know, you got to get that baby out of there.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And this is what's being marked as comedy today. I mean, we've gotten to a place that's so horrific that we can't have decent conversations anymore. And this is what we're facing in our culture. And we need to stand in the gap and cry out to God. Cry out to God that He would soften our hearts and bring wisdom within this horrific conversation. Let's go to Lynn in Kansas City. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for calling Washington Watch. Lynn, are you there?
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I tune in all the time, but I'm perplexed because apparently somewhere along the line I missed somebody explaining what is the difference between biblical view and biblical worldview. I don't know what that means.
Well, a biblical worldview is when we use Scripture to define our path and that we lean on Scripture and God's wisdom that comes to us through Scripture to give us a worldview. A biblical worldview lived out should shape the way we vote, the kinds of people we vote for, and what we do in our life and how we treat folks.
Oh, okay. Okay. Very good. To me, it's about the same thing. So it's just a matter of semantics.
Yeah, it's so semantics. you're welcome. Thanks, Lynn, for calling. Let's go to, is it Bo? Are you there?
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I was just going to say, as a conservative youth, these numbers that your previous guest just talked about are very scary, and, it makes me want to, stand up and do something about it, and, having you guys and these resources is really something positive for conservative youth to have and to have a solid foundation on.
Well, make sure you give your pastor this information. I'm telling you, if I were in the pulpit right now, George's study would be weeks and weeks and weeks of preaching content, and you could break down every one of these categories and build a whole sermon around it. It's that strong and so important, and I'm just not hearing a lot of this kind of content being preached about in the pulpit. It's kind of a lot of psychology and a lot of warm fuzzies. And I know a lot of the pastors that listen to Washington Watch and our Watchman on the Wall are different than that, thank the Lord. But I'm telling you, this material should move us to purposely present this from the pulpit. So I hope you share it with your pastor.
Yeah, I will. And I mean, if it doesn't basically scare us into activism, I don't know what will. So I just pray for our future leaders.
Yeah. Amen. Thanks for calling. Appreciate you calling Washington Watch. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Let's go to Charlinda in Texas. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on. I just wanted to say that if we would go back to putting people in stocks on the courthouse lawn and put that young lady that spoke last night or whenever that dinner was, put her in stocks and let people throw tomatoes at her, maybe people would change their views and put Scripture behind her to let people know what she did was completely wrong. That was disgusting to me, and I turned it off, and I couldn't even watch any of it. I mean, it was disgusting. And, until we start standing up and taking back our country, then I don't know where we're going. I think to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what she said, I agree with you. At the same time, I think we have to hold the correspondents who organized the dinner accountable, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I say so. Definitely say so.
All
so
right.
I think that somehow, some way, she should be held accountable, and there should be some kind of repercussions to her for what she said. Abortion is murder, and I don't care whether she likes it or not. When she stands before God having had an abortion, if she's had one, then she's going to have to answer to him, and I wouldn't want to be in her shoes.
Yeah, amen. Well, thanks for calling, Charlinda. Appreciate it from Texas. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Hey, are you finding ways to talk with the younger folk in our culture? Because it's important that we find a way to talk. I mean, we list the statistics and we can say, wow, their worldview is very different and there is not an absolute truth. But that still doesn't stop the fact that we have to find a way to communicate. We have to find a way to break it down and not alienate one another, because we don't want to do that. We want to be able to have our convictions and say, this is what I believe. And I'm sorry you disagree, but we don't want to break down communication, because many of these are our children. These are our folks that we love. They're our family members. They're our colleagues that we work with day in and day out. So where is the balance where we stand strong on our convictions, but at the same time, we don't shut down conversation? Because that's really easy to do, to shut down conversation where we just stop talking with one another. Well, let's go to my hometown, Kansas City. Hi, Percy. How are you? Welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, I'm kind of brokenhearted, but I'm doing okay.
Well, yeah, I think you say that for a lot of us, too. But what's on your mind?
Well, the thing is that, are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if I don't have too good of a connection here, but... I grew up in the 50s, and I started public school. They read the Bible in the classroom every day for the first couple of years. Mm-hmm. And we had people who respected God's word back then, and it was a different society.
Right.
And the fact that we have gone away from that, people have no respect for who they are. They don't even understand who they are. They don't understand they were made by God for his purposes, and it's just tragic to see our society today when really all it's needed is for people to turn their lives around and understand that they were made by God to serve him and to serve other people. And if we could get a huge percentage of our citizens to even believe that and act on it, we'd have such a difference than we have today.
Yeah. Well, good insights. Thank you so much. And you know, this is what I have to say to this comedian. A doctor had advised a mother, did you hear the story? That she should abort her twins. Well, she refused. And now they're graduating top in their class. Heather Garrity doctor said she should have aborted her twin babies. But now they are graduating top in their class. Go look for that story. Real quick, let's go to Perry in Mississippi. Hi, Perry.
Hey, Daddy.
How you doing?
I'm doing just great. But I don't want to take much of your time, but I just want to make a comment. That obscene comedian that talks about Huckabee, she talked about knocking that baby out during divorce, and she didn't call it a fetus. She didn't call it a piece of flesh. So we have her admitting on national TV that when they do that, that's a baby they're dealing with.
Absolutely. That's the only saving grace of that comment. I noticed that too, and I'm glad you picked that up too, Perry. Thanks so much for calling from Mississippi. Well, we're out of time. This show goes so fast, and I wish I could be on another hour with you. Appreciate you coming along with us today on this Tuesday. And I leave you with this from Isaiah 43:2. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze. We'll see you tomorrow. If the waters don't rise and the Lord tarries, we'll have Tony will be here tomorrow on Washington Watch. Be well.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.